Good morning.
Ms. Locke, why don't you wait till people have managed to switch tables, adversary is seated.
Till the mob scene clears out.
May it please the court, Donna Locke on behalf of the County of Cook. The district court summed up its reasons for imposing sanctions in its May 4, 2004 ruling when it stated the allegedly sanctionable conduct involved one simple matter, circumventing the federal court's removal jurisdiction. Whether a case is filed in or removed to federal court, the appointment of a special state's attorney pursuant to Section 3-9008 of the Illinois Counties Code does not fall within a federal court's supplemental jurisdiction. The federal court has supplemental jurisdiction over state claims that are factually related to federal claims where the federal court's role is to resolve disputes. Section 3-9008 does not create a claim, and the appointment of a special state's attorney is collateral to any claim. Section 3-9008 provides for the appointment...
I'm puzzled by this. The statute says that the court in which the case is pending can appoint a special state's attorney. Now, I appreciate your position that it doesn't say that only the court in which the case is pending may appoint a special state's attorney, and perhaps you should focus on the latter point. But it's hard to understand why, if it says the court in which the case is pending can appoint a special state's attorney, why we would say that it can't, or that it can't have anything to do with it.
Well, first of all, the Illinois General Assembly does not confer jurisdiction on a federal court.
No, of course not. It has nothing to do with jurisdiction. Jurisdiction in this case is given by the fact that the suit arises under a federal statute, 1983. That's where the federal jurisdiction came from, that in connection with 1331 and 1343.
Yes, but those are, but they're the state law claims are removed to federal court.
Are you familiar with Chicago against the International College of Surgeons?
No, Your Honor.
The kind of argument you're making was an argument that very similar to the one the city of Chicago made to argue that federal courts could not review state administrative decisions. The Supreme Court rejected it 9-0. The argument you're now making is almost word for word identical to what the Supreme Court rejected in College of Surgeons. So as I say, I don't think you want to spend your time contesting whether the district court had authority to appoint special state's attorneys.
The question is whether it is unique
authority.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear both.
Unique is the only place that could be appointed would be the district court. And your position should be no, I would take it.
Our position is that the...
But you will have to concede that all other things being equal, they could appoint an attorney to represent a party proceeding before them.
Well, our position has been in our briefs that there is no federal jurisdiction, but we also say that the state court still maintains jurisdiction. This is...
Stop. Under normal circumstances, if there is an attorney representing a party to a proceeding before the court, assuming he's a licensed attorney, licensed to practice in that court, it's none of the court's business who hired him or why, is it?
That's correct.
All right, why don't you hang on to that one and let it go at that?
Well, I think we've made that argument as well, but the state's attorney is not just another
licensed
attorney.
You're talking to a former state's attorney.
I'm fairly well aware
of what powers the state's attorney has and does in the power of the state and so on. But the point of the matter is the federal court does have jurisdiction to appoint attorneys to represent parties before it in various things, including plaintiffs or defendants in 1983 actions. Am I correct in my analysis
so
far?
Absolutely, yes.
All right. But having had an attorney before it, already representing one of the parties, Does he have any right to say, "No, I don't like you. Get out of here. I don't like the way you were hired."
No.
Well, I don't like who's paying you.
Yeah.
Which is what this case is
about.
Or
what you're being paid.
Yeah. In which case, I would just stand there smiling and forget it.
Can the federal court complain that Cook County is paying these lawyers? That's all.
Well, the federal court complained that the circuit court appointments were quorum non judice. And that the circuit court had no authority.
He was never an altar boy, but see, I was an altar boy. I could tell you.
I had 6 years of real Latin, but they pronounce it differently.
Well,
the real Latin did, yeah.
So the district court found that the circuit court order was not a valid order, and for that reason, it ordered the disgorgement and the...
Now we're back to the exclusive jurisdiction question. District courts seem to believe that if a federal court has jurisdiction to do something in a dispute, mm-hmm. no other court can have jurisdiction to do anything related to that dispute. Now, that proposition is inconsistent with 220 years of U.S. practice, with a decision of the Supreme Court handed down less than a month ago, and so on. As I keep suggesting, maybe you want to concentrate on that.
Matter of fact, he's just concentrated for you. You ought to quit.
Well, this appeal certainly highlights the substantial confusion in this county with respect to such appointments. In our briefs, we've shown how there are some appointments are in federal court, some of them are in state court. The action in state court is a separate action, and it is not
who cares?
Part
why
of the
do you
removal.
Even need an action in state court?
The statute requires a court appointment for a special state's attorney.
Yeah, but that's a problem with the state court and the lawyer there. It's not our problem. Not the problem downstairs. It's just no problem to us at all. Why are we involved?
Well, because of the sanctions.
Well, I understand why you're here.
Mm-hmm. That's it. The sanctions were based, insofar as the sanctions were based on the attorney's fees being improperly acquired in state court. The county has been ordered to pay these, and from one court and been ordered to accept.
We ought to let Mr. Sullivan tell me what business is it in the district court.
Well, Mr. Eaton is anxious to talk to you as well. So
I can see you straining at the bit.
So I will let him continue here.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Locke. Mr. Eaton.
Refresh my recollection, Mr. Eaton. Who do you represent?
I represent Mr. Theobald, Mr. Pinelli, and Mr. Brunell for this argument, Your Honor, the counsel that was sanctioned.
So the lady represented the County of Cook, who was happily able to pick up the tab for the lawyers, I take it.
Yes, that's correct.
And all you're doing is worrying about the sanctions.
I'm worrying about the sanctions, yes, Your Honor.
Carry on.
Thank you.
And the fact that your clients have been enjoined from accepting any future checks the city of Cook County may send.
Absolutely, which has put a screeching halt to the state court proceedings because they can
make it hard for them to pay you, too. Go ahead.
Before them. Your Honor, you've hit the nail on the head. The question is, Judge Norgal thought he had exclusive jurisdiction and that any other court that acted pursuant to that act was improper in their conduct. As a matter of fact, he said when we pointed out over 25 years, we didn't say hundreds of years, but over 25 years.
220, but go ahead.
Counsel had been appointed. We documented 25 years
we'll
of where there...
226 is probably the right number.
Yeah. Okay, no. Where there had been appointments. And the judge said, therefore, the fact that other federal courts handling those cases might not have been aware of the state court actions, it could very well be that this improper conduct is pervasive, and that underscores the importance of the rule to show cause. So he wants to change this whole system on the backs of these three individuals, and that's what we object to, because we do not believe that triggers inherent powers.
Yeah, well, if you're aware of the history, this particular district judge once wrote an opinion about 5 years ago, suggesting that there was a first-filed rule, that the first-filed case displaces any possibility of jurisdiction in any other suit. And we reversed it. We said there's no such rule, that parallel litigation is consistent with federal jurisdiction. You could have written a one-paragraph brief if you'd been aware of that decision, which the district judge seems to have forgotten.
Evidently he did, and I wish I could have been shorter, Your Honor, with that in mind.
You would have been felt safe, though.
Well, you have to raise all the points you think that support you. And
you
we
did
believe,
in your brief, didn't you?
Pardon me?
You did all that in your brief, didn't
we
you?
We did. We raised a number of these issues. Okay. And what I thought was important to raise here are some, just to emphasize in light of the other side's brief, which we did comment briefly on in our reply, Your Honor. But with respect to the order that Judge Norgal says we violated, the order that he points to in his judgment was the order denying the motion to remand. And the order denying the motion to reconsider that motion to remand and this court's denial of the certification. And we would contend that there was nothing in that order, we shouldn't contend, there's nothing in that order that says we cannot seek an appointment in state court. And we told the court on three different occasions prior to May 23, 2003, that we were special state's attorneys, we've been appointed by the state court, and that this issue came up directly with the Carver issue. And Judge Norgal actually disputed our appointment during that dialogue with the court on those three different occasions. These were not fleeting references or passing references. These lawyers felt that they did everything that they were required to do, and the only order that was entered with respect to their status was by the state court. There was never a direct order by Judge Norgal saying, you cannot seek an appointment in state court. You cannot go over and seek payment. There was a position of Judge Norgal.
I don't see how a federal court could enter such an order given the Anti-Injunction Act.
Oh, I agree, and also I would also...
And one of the, as I say, you could have written a one-paragraph brief. One of the things you would have cited in that paragraph is 2283, although oddly the parties in this case, although the briefs are long, do not discuss the anti-injunction.
Well, we do discuss 2283, Your Honor, in our reply brief, because we were discussing the injunction with respect to the fact the appellee had argued, the amicus brief had argued, that an exception to 2283 is where removal jurisdiction is involved, where you can enjoin state proceedings that are in violation of, I think it's 1446D. And we said that did not apply in this case. Because
do you have any position as to whether or not an order of the district court could require the County of Cook to pay a particular lawyer that the district court had appointed?
Well, Your Honor, in this case they did that. Judge Norgal actually entered orders with respect to fees on special state's attorneys that he eventually approved when there was a substitution, and he ordered the County of Cook to pay it, and it was...
Well, is that a valid order? It's a position that you're not representing the county, but do you think it's a valid order?
Well, yes, because I think at that point where the motion was before the judge and mm-hmm. that he had approved their appointment and they had sought their fees from here, the issue we have here, obviously, is whether or not a state court could also do that while it was pending in federal court, which is what these lawyers chose to do. And, in fact, the other issue which was raised by Your Honors briefly with Ms. Locke was the issue of whether or not what business was this of this court. And we discussed United States versus...
Well, no, I understand what business is of this court. I want to know what business is of the district court. Who pays what lawyer anywhere?
That's what I meant to say, Your Honor.
Yeah.
We believe...
She didn't have to argue that. She's on my side on that one, so go.
Yes. We believe that this was not an issue that this district court judge should have pursued once the motion had been withdrawn and the lawyers had proceeded, because he was even unsure of the applicability of the Illinois statute and raised that at the hearing on March 22, 2002. Wanted us to brief it. At that point, they withdrew their motions, sought to emphasize the motion to remand. When that was denied, they went to state court, got appointed at the direction of the state's attorney. So we would argue that his sanctions were inappropriate. This had nothing to do with the removal jurisdiction of the court. This was not an affront. This was a procedure that had been followed for years. They went to state court, got appointed. The injunction should be dissolved, and the sanctions should also be eliminated. Thank you, judges.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Mr. Sullivan.
Noble fellow. A noble fellow.
Totally so.
May it please the court. My name is Barry Sullivan. I am counsel for the court-appointed amicus curiae, Gerald Salovey.
Mr. Sullivan, the Unlike Judge Bauer and Judge Easterbrook, I'm not from Chicago.
Judge Easterbrook didn't start here either, so I mean, he's an import from New York.
He's from Buffalo, but and he's hard to Buffalo in cases like this. But what? It just seems a little odd that the district judge had any interest in who was going to pay the fees of the lawyers here. And I think I was a district judge in Wisconsin for 16 years and
never cared who paid.
Enough headaches without worrying about who was going to pay a lawyer if the party paying the lawyer agreed to pay him.
That's a very good question, Your Honor. And I think that, like a lot of good plays and bad plays, starting at scene one is usually a pretty good idea to figure out what the plot is. The reason that Judge Norgel was interested in this was that initially a motion was made to him by the attorneys asking for him to appoint them as special state's attorneys. And it was because that motion was brought before him that he was interested in it.
That was a mistake.
That was a mistake.
If they hadn't asked for the appointment, none of this would have occurred.
This is probably true, Your Honor, but the reason they asked for the appointment, now contradicting my rule and going back to the prologue, is that the very first thing that happened after the case was removed was that the attorneys for Sheriff Sheehan went to the Circuit Court of Cook County and asked Judge Donnersberger, who had previously had the case, to amend the order of appointment in some way. And Judge Donnersberger said, no, I'm sorry, I don't have jurisdiction to do that. This case has been removed to federal court, and you'll have to go to federal court to do it. So I'm speculating now, but I'm assuming that's why everybody then went to federal court with these motions, which is very peculiar given the fact, Your Honors, that we're told that for 15 or 20 years, notwithstanding the Shackman case, the consistent practice has been to go to state court for these orders rather than to federal court.
Why has Shackman changed that?
Well, I think that Shackman said that it was appropriate to go to federal court, or at least it was not inappropriate to go to federal court for the entry of such an order.
You know, I can understand asking the district judge, maybe in an abundance of caution, to enter this sort of order, but do you even need anything like that? I mean, couldn't Cook County say to these lawyers, look, we've got a problem, we can't represent them, you do it, we'll pay your fees? Not even...
Well, I think that there has to be some sort of an order, Your Honor.
Why?
I believe that that's the provision that the state's attorney's office...
No. State's attorney's office doesn't have a provision where they have to hire private lawyers for anybody. What if these two guys had gone out and hired their own private lawyers? Would he have any beef about who was paying him?
Oh, no, I thought you were... In fact, he said that. He didn't have a beef about who was paying them.
Well, now, why is he complaining about them being paid by the county?
Well, I think that really what he's complaining about is what happened at the beginning. They're coming to him, asking him to do this. And he said, you know, I have to tell you, first of all, I don't know whether I have the power to do this. I'd like you to write some briefs on it. Yeah. And second, if... I do have the power to appoint somebody. I wouldn't appoint you guys. And that's when they decided that they would withdraw their motions. Mm-hmm. And they didn't. Then they went to the Circuit Court of Cook County.
Right.
The transcript of what happened in the Circuit Court of Cook County is in the appendix.
Right.
They didn't tell the Circuit Court of Cook County that they had been before Judge Norgel on this motion. They didn't say that
was
Judge
that required
Norgel,
of them?
Well, Your Honor, I think that if I were going from the court of one jurisdiction
you might, as a matter of courtesy, I want to know, as a matter of law, do you think it's required that they explain that we're here because the district court refused to appoint us because he doesn't want anybody who ever had anything to do with the state's attorney, which, by the way, as near as I can tell, eliminates the entire federal or state criminal bar. But,
well, Your Honor, I'm not here to defend his reason for not wanting to appoint these gentleman.
I suppose the follow-up question to that, Mr. Sullivan, is whether the real problem wouldn't be in the Circuit Court of Cook County. That is, if they weren't as forthcoming with the Circuit Court as they should have been, isn't the remedy there? I mean, I'm worried, to think of another statute that hasn't been really pursued very much here, I'm worried about the Full Faith and Credit Statute, 1738, which says that the decision of a state court has in federal court whatever force it has in state court. And the district court in this case seems to have said, I'm just going to ignore the state court judgment. And perhaps he was saying, I'm going to ignore it because I think that if they'd gone back to the state court and been more candid, maybe the state judge wouldn't have done this.
Well, I think that
allowing a state judgment to be collaterally attacked in federal court is inconsistent with 1738.
Well, I think it's a little bit more complicated than that, Your Honor. It seems to me that it's not just that they went to state court and they didn't tell the state court what had happened in federal court. Then they went back to federal court and they didn't tell the federal court what had happened in state court.
Well, they didn't tell a federal judge immediately, but that, of course, leads to the question that both of my colleagues have asked, which is, what skin is it off the judge's nose if the defense lawyers are being paid by court order on the one hand, or just a check written by the Cook County privately on the other, or by the defendants personally, or by the defendants' mothers, or by the Legal Aid Society? I mean, what difference does it make who writes the check?
I think in the abstract it makes no difference whatsoever, Your Honors. I think in this case, however, that because of the way these circumstances unraveled, there was a duty of candor, something more than mere courtesy. There was a duty of candor. There was a duty once there was an order, I think. And I don't believe that you can't have an order just because it isn't written down, which is what the appellate...
What does that mean?
We have said that you can't. The case is Bates against Johnson. None of the parties has cited it. We have said that if the district judge just says things in open court and does not enter an order, it has no binding effect.
With respect to the conduct of attorneys.
Period.
Well, I would suggest to Your Honors that what this case is really about is not simply the order, whether it was effective or not. What this case is really about is this persistent lack of candor with respect to the situation that they had first brought to him. And I don't think that just because it was something which he needn't have concerned himself about, but which they had brought to his attention, that it is necessarily the case that they didn't have to be candid about what had happened. And I think that there was, I mean, we're told that on many times during these proceedings that the judge was told about their status as special state's attorneys, and then just suddenly in the middle of May he decided to become interested in that. I think if Your Honors look at the transcripts with respect to these statements about their being special state's attorneys, you'll find that in every case this is raised, it's in answer to another question. The question is, why isn't the state's attorney here representing the county? And I believe in each instance, Mr. Theobald says, well, we're special state's attorneys.
Well, the state's attorney had indicted the people involved, which is why he wasn't there in the first place, and that's why he stayed out of it altogether, which is perfectly appropriate, you wouldn't suggest, wouldn't you?
This is correct.
All right, so why does he have to be there? The explanation was before the court.
But what I'm saying, Your Honor, is that as far as putting the judge on notice that they had...
That's assuming he's entitled to be on notice of anything that's going on any place.
This is correct, Your Honor.
Yeah.
The other point that I would make is that this case is also, I think, about the orderly administration of justice. I think that whether this judge had a right to be interested in these subjects, whether he had a right to order counsel to do something or not to do something, is really immaterial. What is really at issue is the fact that no one did anything to clarify his position, and no one did anything to seek review. He did say that these lawyers couldn't look to the county to pay their attorney's fees, and a week later they were back in the state court seeking their attorney's fees and not telling him.
What this case is all about? Failure to tell?
I think that is right, Your Honor.
Failure to disclose.
Failure to disclose, and also failure to take an appeal, failure to seek a mandamus, and to get out of this
box. We've already said we don't like mandamus, you know.
I know you don't, Your Honor.
Not courting them, I'll tell you.
But in some cases, you do grant them, such as in the Barnett case, which I think would have been very appropriate here.
Okay.
Unless Your Honors have any further questions,
no.
It's our position that the judgment below should be affirmed. Thank you, Your Honors. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Mr. Sullivan.
May I say, by the way, that I'm pleased that you undertook the appointment.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Ms. Locke, you have perhaps 30 seconds.
Unless the panel has some questions for me, I will waive rebuttal.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Mr. Theobald, you had reserved some time. Limited to rebuttal, you understand.